We're holding the last line of Paytas Omudbez. We're in the middle of dealing with the dinim of where the Torah says, Lo saxim sho bedishoy, you're not allowed to muzzle an ox while it's threshing grain. We established that to a large extent, the dinim of that are similar to the dinim of a worker eating on the job, which was the subject of our Mishnah, which is why we're dealing in detail with that. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Horis hamiraksos betur, cows that are miraksos on grain. Now, miraksos can mean that it means that they're treading. Rashi explains that it means like this. We take, for example, barley, we soak it in water, and then we dry them in an oven. Afterwards, you have animals thresh them to get the shells off. What you're left with then is what's called elsewhere in the Gemara Chushla. So now, in other words, you're doing that processing in order to remove the shells. Now Tosfos also adds that it's going to be that afterwards you're not going to be using it to make bread, because then we learned before that it's not nigma malach and machala, and you would be and the worker would be able to eat from it, and therefore you would have to let the animal eat from it. Rather, we're talking about where this grain, after it's made into chushla, after you go through this processing and are able to remove the shells, you're going to be using it. For example, you're going to dry it in an oven you're going to toast it in an oven. You're going to make from it a concoction called the Gemara Shossis, which is basically a drink containing flour. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that so according to Rashi and Tosfos, the vote is that it's already reached Gemar Malacha. And therefore, it's already reached Gemar Malacha as far as Meiser. So therefore, the rules of a worker eating from it don't apply anymore. And therefore, as the Gemara is going to continue now, the rule that you have to let the animal eat from it and you're not allowed to muzzle it doesn't apply either. Because as we said before, the two things go together. The Rambam has a different understanding of it, that Paras Amiraxis Betur means that the animals are stepping on the grain, not because you... put them there in order to thresh it, but because like they took a shortcut and they ended up trampling on the grain. Anyway, it continues the Gemara. The Hadoshis Petrumo Meiser, or where they're threshing in the normal way, but the produce that they're threshing is Trumo Meiser. So in all those cases, you are allowed to, now Truma and Meiser, Rashi points out, normally you're not taking those until the grain has already been threshed. So if that's the case, then how are we talking about the animal threshing Truma and Meiser? So on the face of it, we have to be talking about, Rashi says, that Hikdimoy b'shibolin, that while it was still in ears of grain before you threshed it and everything, is when you separated Truma and Meiser. The Gemara elsewhere talks about the idea a person might do that, and you have dinim of that in terms of whether in terms of, for example, the Levi coming and getting his Meiser first when he is and isn't chayiv to give the Kohen the Truma out of his portion. He has to give Truma's Meiser regardless. But anyway, the point is, it can happen that you separate Truma and Meiser while it's still on the stalks before it's been threshed. So Rashi explains that's what we're talking about over here. In any case, in all these cases, Eina over Meshumlo Bal Tachson, in all these cases, he's not over on the Isser if he muzzles the ox. So in the case of the Meraxis Betruah, again, as Tosfos had clarified, since we're talking about over here where they've already reached Gemar Malacha, because again, you're not going to be making them into bread, then therefore the rules that we said before apply. The same way as a worker can't eat from it where it's detached from the ground and it's after Gemar Malacha, the same way the animal is not necessarily entitled to eat from it, and therefore you would be allowed to muzzle the animal and you're not over on Lysaxon. In the case of Truma and Meiser, the reason is because, so Rashi explains, where are we learning the whole concept that you have to let the animal eat, you can't muzzle it, because the pasuk says Lysaxon should be dishoy, you're not allowed to muzzle the ox while it's threshing. Well, usually threshing does not involve Truma and Meiser, because again, usually Truma and Meiser are given only after Miruach, which is a much later stage. So even though in this particular case, we're talking about the person separated Truma and Meiser early, nevertheless, Rashi says we can still learn from the word Dayish that it applies only to things that are usually done in the stage before Dayish, which is to exclude Truma and Meiser.
Did we try to prove from Kol V'Chomer that Behema Tachsom is for mechubar also.
So we said it, we ended up, right. What we ended up saying is there's two different things. B'mechubar l'karka, when it's doing something that's attached to the ground, then both a person and an animal can eat. Ultimately, we said, never mind the kavachomers. We said, we tried to learn things from kavachomers. Ultimately, we learned from a hekish between the person and the animal. So there's two different things. Here we're talking about where it's already detached from the ground. You've already harvested it. Now you're in the process of threshing it. You're having the animal thresh it for you. So then that's when the pasuk is saying, "Lasachsim shobadisho." But Rashi explains that since Dayish usually implies that Truma and Maisa haven't been separated yet, because usually you do those only later, then therefore that would exclude Truma and Maisa from this rule. Tosfos disagrees with that and says that actually, because since the pasuk says dishoy, it's threshing, that means something that's rory to give to the animal. Truma, a Yisrael is not allowed to give to his animal. Even a Kohen is not allowed to give regular truma to his animal, only we're going to talk about in a minute, kashinim, a type of beans, which are normally fed to animals. They're the truma from those you're allowed to feed to animals because it is normal animal food, but not regular food, which is normally meant as human food. A Kohen wouldn't be allowed to, Tosfos points out. And as far as Meiser, we're going to talk about that. This is talking about Meiser Sheni, and therefore it's Mom and Gavoya, at least according to one opinion. And therefore, again, it's not yours to give to the animal. Whether in fact we're talking about over here about Meiser Rishon or Meiser Sheni, there are different opinions among the Rishonim. But Tosfos evidently learns that we're talking about Meiser Sheni over here. Anyway, so therefore, so you're not over on Baltaxim. So again, according to Rashi and Tosfos, the Meraxis Betvua is because it's already reached the stage of being Gmar Malacha L'Maiser, and by Truma and Maiser, because it's not in the category of Dayish according to Rashi, or it's not in the category of Dishoy according to Tosfos. Meanwhile, according to the Rambam, that Meraxis Betvua means that they were walking and they ended up stepping on the grain. Then therefore, the idea is it's not something that you're not intending for them to do it, and therefore you're allowed. There's actually the Alter Rebbe discusses the point over there because it's Dover Sheni Miskaven. There's a Sicha and Chelik Dalet, actually, a Hadron on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, because these Dinim of Chassima are the very end of the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, Chosh and Mishpat. So the Rebbe in Tavshin Chav Gimel, the Alter Rebbe's 150th Yotzeit, made a Siyum on the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch in a Fabrengen, and it was published afterwards in Lekut HaSichas Chelik Dalet. And the Rebbe analyzes Al Pi Halacha why that should be, why we don't say it's psik resha, and then the Rebbe ends up connecting it with the beginning of Shulchan Aruch about saying Moda'ani in the morning, the idea about mitzvah tzrichas kavana, where here we're talking about whether kavana is important or not. Anyway, Avu v'pnei marasa ayin, continues the Gemara. However, the fact is, you do have, at least when it comes to the Truma and Meiser, and according to Rashi and Tosfos, also when we're talking about the Meraxis b'tvura, it looks like they're doing regular threshing, and people are going to see your animal muzzled, and they're going to think that you're over. Maybe bull ma'osamin. What you have to do is you take a fistful of that same kind of species. For example, if it's threshing wheat, then you take a fistful of wheat. Barley, you take a fistful of barley. Betolalov is traskel and shabapia, and you put that in the feed bag that's by the animal's mouth. So this way, in other words, the animal is not going to be eating from the actual grain that it's threshing for the various reasons that we discussed, but nevertheless, it will be able to eat from other, you're going to take other regular fulin grain, and you're going to put it in the feed bag, and it'll eat it that way. Reb Shimon Yechoy says, you bring kashinim, which are a type of beans. Most of the time, they're not human food. Most of the time, they're used as animal food, but occasionally in a pinch, we find in Shas, people would eat them. Anyway, you bring these kashinim, but toy the law, and you put those in the feed bag, shak kashinim, yofis, lominakol, because kashinim are better for the animal than anything else. It's a different opinions among Rishonim. Is Reb Shimon Yechoy arguing with the Tanakama, where the Tanakama was saying that you give it the same species that it's eating, and Reb Shimon is saying, don't give it that species, instead give it kashinim. Or is it that's how the Rosh learns versus the Ritva learns that Rav Shimon is saying that you can choose to put kashinim instead. Okay. Anyway, so the Gemara says Urimin. Now, so you have like this. What have we said so far? That with you have three cases, Miraxis Bitvua, You have Meraxis Betvua, and you have where it's threshing Truma and Meiser. So Ramini, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction. Another Braisa says, Pora samaraxis betvua ain't over mishum baltaxim. When the animals are maraxis on the grain, then you're not over on baltaxim. So whether we're talking about, again, like Rashi and Tosfos say, that they're threshing it, not regular threshing, but just in order to remove the shells after the grain was soaked. Or according to the Rambam, where they happen to be walking over the grain without you having any intention for them to thresh the grain. So eino over mishum bal tachsim, fine. That's the same as the previous braisa. But the second braisa continues, v'hadoshus betruma o meiser, but where they're threshing truma and meiser, you can't muzzle them. And if you do over mishum bal tachsim, then you are over on bal tachsim, and you would be over for muzzling them. And the braisa continues, v'nochri adosh b'parosish o'Yisrael. Now another din, if a goy is threshing using a Jew's cow, so now if the Jew told them, Rashi explains, you can go ahead and muzzle my animal, and you can thresh your grain with that. So the braisa says, eino over mishum baltachsim, then the yid is not going to be over on baltachsim, which we're going to discuss in more detail later in the Gemara. But the flip side is, if a yid were to be using a goy's animal to thresh, and he were to need to muzzle it, he would be over on bal tachsim, because the fact is he's the one who's doing the threshing. So we'll get to the matter of the goy and the yid later, but in any case, kasha truma truma, kasha meiser meiser. You have a contradiction in the matter of truma and in the matter of meiser. The first braisa said that you're not over on bal tachsim, and only because of marisa ayin, give the animal some food to eat while it's threshing. And the second braisa is saying you are over. So the Gemara says, Bishlema truma truma like kasha. Really, when it comes to truma versus truma, there's no contradiction. Can be truma, can be gedulei truma, because there's a difference between actual truma versus what grew from truma. Now you can have where you planted truma and it grew. So Rashi brings from a Gemara in Shabbos that this is one of those things where Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel and ended up and they voted and decided the din is that midrabanan, that grain or whatever it is that grows from that is still considered truma, but it's only truma midrabanan. It's not daraisa anymore. So the first braisa is talking about actual truma. So you can't. So either according to Rashi, it's not included to begin with in the word dayish, or according to Tosfos, it's not part of dishoy, because you're not allowed to feed it to the animal. So then you're allowed to muzzle the animal, as opposed to gedulei truma, when you planted truma and it grew. So yes, it has a din of truma d'rabbanan, but nevertheless, you would still be over on bal tachsim. To be sure, the Ritva points out, you still wouldn't be able to give it the actual grain itself that it's threshing, because the fact is it's still also d'rabbanan. But the point is, unlike in the previous case where only marisa ayin, you have to give it like a fistful to be able to eat, here you would have to give it the actual proper amount that it would eat had it been normal grain, because after all, daraisa it is chulin. It's only d'rabbanan that it's truma, and therefore you're going to have to give the animal that. So truma, there's no contradiction. Ela meiser and meiser kasha. What about, though, how are you going to reconcile the two braises when it comes to meiser? V'chitema meiser and meiser namele kasha, panma meiser, panma gedule meiser. You're going to give the same answer that the second braise is talking about where you planted meiser. Doesn't work. V'shlema gedule truma truma. When it comes to gedule truma, then midrabanan, it's considered truma. Like we said, Beis Shammai versus Beis Hillel, and the halacha in this is like Beis Shammai.
By the way, people usually don't plant truma.
People don't usually plant truma. The chachamim penalize. The Gemara explains in Shabbos over there, the chachamim were concerned, in particular, the koyin might keep around truma tmeya, for example, thinking I can't eat it, but I can plant it, and then he might up accidentally eating it, and then they ended up extending that in general to planting truma.
Truma can't plant truma tmeya.
So you can't plant truma tmeya, and in the end you can. And if you plant truma tahora, then it has the din, ends up having the din of truma tahora. But meiser of gedulei meiser chulin ninu. The fact is, if you plant meiser, then it's considered chulin. The tnan, as in fact we learn in a Mishnah that says just that gedulei tevel gedulei meiser sheni chulin. If you plant tevel, even though it is true that the tevua, contains chulin and contains truma and contains meiser in it, So nevertheless, though, and again, Rashi explains normally, again, you're what you have is, again, so you had miruach, you at that point it became chayev and truma and meiser. Instead of taking the grain and giving truma and meiser from it, instead you went and planted some of it before doing that. The fact is, when you plant wheat or any other kind of grain, the original seed rots away in the ground, and therefore it's bottled. When it comes to truma, you have the particular thing again, because you have the Kohen himself has truma tmeya. Rashi points out, based on that Gemara, also you have over there, you can have a concern that the Yisrael may keep the truma tahora and figure, why should I bother giving it to the Kohen? I might as well plant it. So therefore, the Chachamim are penalizing him and saying it's going to be truma anyhow, and you're not going to gain anything from planting it, because either way, one way or the other, you're going to have to give it to the Kohen. But when it comes, it's always going to be truma. That's the point. Yeah. But when it comes to maaser, you don't have. When it comes to tevel, and when it comes to maaser, you don't have those considerations. So therefore, the Mishnah says that tevel and what grows from tevel and from maaser sheni is chulin. So there's no such thing as gedulei maaser to have an issue with that. So why is the second braisa talking about gedulei maaser where there's no chiddush in? In other words, of course you can't muzzle the animal while it's threshing that. Anyway, it's chulin for you to eat. It's normal grain.
Is there a penalty lechatchil plant tevel, or do you have to take the truma and
maaser? Lechatchila, you should take the truma. But we're saying that chachamim are not penalizing you when you... Now, what it is elsewhere in other places, we learned in Nedarim, we learned here and there in other places, when the tevel is something that doesn't rot away in the ground, but rather keeps on increasing, then that's different. Then you have complications. For example, onions. You plant an onion bulb in the ground, it doesn't rot away. Instead, it just keeps on growing new and new layers. There you have an issue because you have the gedulin are not necessarily mevatel, the original thing that was also. But here we're talking about wheat or barley or what have you, where they rot away in the ground, then a new plant develops from it. Then therefore the chachamim don't penalize. Okay. So the Gemara answers Ela loy kasha. Rather, the answer is there's no contradiction between the two braises. Haba maaser rishon, haba maaser sheni. The difference is the second braisa is talking about maaser rishon. Well, maaser rishon, you're allowed to eat. You have to take out trumas maaser from it. But other than that, yeah, you have to give it to the Levi. But the fact is that the fact is that it is mutter for Zorim to eat. As opposed to maaser sheni, you have the rules outside your shalayim. You can't eat it, and therefore it can't be called dishay. Tosfos points out, by the way, now when it comes to maaser sheni, again, we're not gonna say that you're not allowed to plant it. The whole point is you might keep it around and then you want to use it when it's tuma, when it's tome. Why would you? If it's maaser sheni and it became tome, you can redeem it and take the money to your shalayim. So therefore, the chum had no reason to impose any special rule over there. But again, now we're saying maaser rishon versus maaser sheni. So maaser sheni, you can't eat outside of your shalayim. So therefore, you can't feed it to the animal either. And therefore you'd be able to muzzle the animal. Actually, the Ritva learns the other way around. Maaser rishon, you can't have the animal eat from it because it still contains the trumas maaser. Maaser sheni would be talking about in your shalayim where you're allowed to eat it, and therefore you're also allowed to feed it to the animal, and therefore you can't muzzle the animal. So that's one answer. The Gemara says, "Bi'boisema." Another answer, "Hava hav." Maaser sheni. Both brises can be talking about with maaser sheni. V'le'kasha hara meir hara bihoda, where the two brises are appointed a meir and a bihoda respectively. Rav Meir, Rama Maaser Sheni Mamon Gavoyahu. Rav Meir says, we learned in Kiddushin in particular, we learned about it in Bava Kama as well. Not in Bava Kama, we learned about it in Or Masechta in Perek HaZohav. Rav Meir holds that Maaser Sheni is Hashem's property. Hashem gives you permission to eat it in your Shalayim or to redeem it and take the money to your Shalayim, etc. But it's not really considered yours. So therefore, it's not Dishoy, it's not yours. And therefore you can't eat it, and therefore you can't feed it to the animal. Whereas the first braisa was according to Rabbi Yehuda, Dama Maaser Sheni Mamon, or second braisa is according to Rabbi Yehuda, Dama Maaser Sheni Mamon Hedyot. Rabbi Yehuda says that Maaser Sheni is Mamon Hedyot. It's considered yours, just like any other produce of yours. So therefore you have to let the animal eat from it. And therefore, if you want to prevent the animal from eating, then that's where the first braisa is saying that you're, so that's where the second braisa is saying that you can't You can't. You can't muzzle it. You have to allow it to eat. And if you're going to, if you want to prevent it from eating, then you're gonna have to put a proper amount in its feed bag. Rashi makes the point over here also, as far as truma, then what we can be talking about is when we said before that with truma you wouldn't be allowed to muzzle it. Let's say, for example, Rashi says the cow belonged to a Yisrael, and even if the Kohen is using the animal for threshing, then he's still not allowed to feed it truma, because the fact is the animal belongs to a Yisrael. So therefore that would be the case, though, that he'd have to give the animal something else to eat so that it doesn't eat from this. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Hey, dummy. Now, how do you anyway have, as we talked about at the top of the Amud, anyway, how do you have that you would have truma and meiser before threshing? You go and shake dima b'shibolin. So, as we said, you're talking about where you gave the meiser, you gave the truma or meiser early while it was still in the stalks before it was threshed." Tosfos actually wonders why the Gemara left it until here. We've been talking since the top of the Omud about Truma and Maisa. Why didn't the Gemara earlier explain this point that Ikdima B'Shibolin? But in any case, that's. Okay. So the question is, Ulu Rabbi Yehuda, V'Haboi Choyim. The question is, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds that it's mom and head. You still have the boy choima. Don't you have to bring it into the walls of your shalayim for it to be mutter to eat? So what are we saying so far? We're saying that the lab of lois sachsoim overrides that rule, and therefore you're not allowed to muzzle the animal, even though it's maiser sheni. Because we're saying according to him, it's mum and head yet, and therefore you can't muzzle the animal. And if you want to prevent it from eating, you can't. You can't muzzle it. If you want, you're going to have to put a large amount of food in its feed bag. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, anyway, though, you have. And the fact is, when it comes to Maisa Sheni, you have also a loisese to not eat it outside your shalayim. So how is the lav of loisachsim overriding the lav to not eat it outside your shalayim? So according to Rashi, the question is, how is the one lav doicha the other lav? The Meiri explains a little differently. He says that when it comes to Maisa Sheni, you have a mitzvah esse and a loisese, and we know that a loisese can't be doicha an esse and a loisese. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, why shouldn't you be able to muzzle the animal? The fact is that you're right now outside your shalayim, you have an iser to eat it. So the answer is you're going to shadosh lifnim mechoyim space pagi. You can answer that we're talking about he's actually threshing the grain within the walls of Beis Pagi. Beis Pagi is an area, is an extension of your shalayim. Rashi explains at one point, the Gemara in Shavuos tells us at great length, we'll learn about it sometime next year, Be'ez Hashem, about a whole process to enlarge the city of your shalayim and make that now you have extra areas that have the kedusha of your shalayim, and you have a whole ceremony with which that's done. Now that area is enclosed by a wall, and that area is called Beis Pagi. Rashi explains, we had at the beginning, near the beginning of the Masechta, we had Chamur Beis Pageha. We talked about a donkey and the reins that are attached to its head. We have the whole contraption of straps and whatever that make up part of the reins that surround the animal's head. And then you have the straps that stick out from that you lead the animal with. And that part that was on the animal's head is called Beis Pagi. So therefore, in the same way over here, Beis Pagi means an extension of your shalayim. Whatever the case, the point is that it's within the city of your shalayim, and therefore you are in fact allowed to eat it. So therefore, so now you don't have that issue that you can't eat it. Therefore, since Rabbi Yehuda holds it is mum and head yet, then therefore you would have to allow the animal to eat from it. Okay, the Gemara says, Yiboy Seima. Or I can give you another answer. So far, we had two answers to reconcile the braises. We said that one's talking about mice. As far as truma, we said one braisa can be talking about truma and the other one gedulei truma. As far as meiser, we said one can be talking about meiser rishon and the other meiser sheni, or one can be or they're both talking about meiser sheni, but it's Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Yehuda. And again, in the case of truma, we don't need all of that. We're talking about that truma versus gedulei truma. And again, with truma, you can't feed the animal even if it belongs, even if the koyin is the one doing the work, unless the animal itself belongs to the koyin. So now the Ibor Yisema, now we can give another answer to reconcile the two things as far as Meiser. Loikasha, Hanma Meiser Vade, Kanma Meiser Dmai. Depends whether we're talking about Meiser Sheni or Meiser Rishon for that matter, any Meiser of Vadai, where there you have, then so you have to give it on a Doraisa level. We are talking about Meiser Sheni. So Meiser Sheni, when it's Vadai, when you know it hasn't had Meiser taken from it, you definitely have to take Meiser Sheni from it, and then you have to take that to Yerushalayim. So that would be the case, then therefore where you're allowed to muzzle the animal, because again, you have to take it to Yerushalayim. You have to take the produce to Yerushalayim. Hanma Meiser Dmai, whereas the other Braise is talking about Meiser Dmai, so it's only Drabbanan that you have to give the Meiser in the first place, and therefore that doesn't override the issue of Loisachsim, and you would have to let the animal eat. So the Gemara says, Hashna de Osis Lahochi. Well, actually, now that you reach that point, Truma Nami Laikasha, then you can use the same answer as far as Truma. All the other answers required us to distinguish between Truma and Meiser. Truma, we were talking about Truma versus Gidule Truma. Meiser, we were talking about Meiser Rishon versus Meiser Sheni, or within Meiser Sheni, Rabbi Yehuda versus Rabbi Meir. Now we can say that both Truma and Meiser, we can say, can be Truma's Vadai, can be Truma's Dmai. Depends whether we're talking about Truma of Vadai or of Dmai, and the two Braises would reflect that distinction. So the Gemara says, so what are you talking about? B'shlema Meiser Dmai Ika. There is such a thing as Meiser of Dmai, because that's how it is. Dmai is that the Amei Oretz are not taking Meiser, and therefore you have to take Meiser. Some of them are not taking Meiser. It's not a majority. The Gemara in many places says, Roiv Amei Oretz Ma'aser Nehen, but you have enough of a Miut HaMotzu. You have enough of a substantial enough minority of Amei Oretz who do not take Meiser, that therefore you have to, and that's where the whole concept of Dmai comes from. Is there such a thing as truma of dmai? V'hatanya, we learn in a brisa, afhu bitulos habidui. Also, the Mishnah at the end of Meiser Sheni discusses a number of takonis of Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and there's quite a bit of discussion who Yochanan Kohen Gadol was. Is he the father of Matisyahu? We say in Alanisim, Matisyahu ben Yochanan Kohen Gadol, Chashmino Yovanov. So is he the father of Matisyahu? Matisyahu also had a son named Yochanan, so conceivably it could be him. He also had a grandson named Yochanan, who from historical sources, from Josephus, we know, ruled over Eretz Yisrael with the title of Kohen Gadol for 30 or so years. So maybe it means him. You also have, famously, where it says that Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a tzaduki after 80 years, is that the same Yochanan Kohen Gadol that we're talking about over here, or a different one? There's quite a lot of, we don't know a lot of these things. Yeah, quite a bit of ink has been spilled about all these details. Anyway, so Yochanan Kohen Gadol, the Mishnah mentions at the end of Meiser Sheni.
I think it was so obvious when they wrote this that they didn't even say it.
I guess so, yeah. At the end of Mishnayis Meiser Sheni, then it describes a number of takonis that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did, and now the Braise explains. It's also at the end of Masechta Soita, so those who are learning it for Sfira will get to it shortly before Shavuos. Afu bitulos avidui. On one of the things that Yochanan Kohen Gadol did is he was mevatel the vidui meiser. Like this, the Torah tells us that when you go in the fourth and seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, you make sure that all of your meiser, all your truma and meiseris and bikurim and everything have been given out to where they're supposed to be, and then you say vidui meiser biyarti hakodesh min abayis, as it says in Parshas Kisavai. But what happened was that one of the psukim says they have a gam nesativ la Levi. I've given the Meiser Rishon to the Levi a few generations before Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Ezra had made a takana, had penalized the Levium. We learned about this in Yevamos, that the Levium, very few of them, relatively speaking, had come to Eretz Yisrael to rebuild the second base of Mikdash, and therefore he penalized them. And there's different opinions in the Gemara of what the penalty was, but in any case, Meiser Rishon is either not being given to the Levium or not being given exclusively to Levium, but also to Kohenim, and therefore Yochanan Kohen Gadol was saying, so now it's not correct to say the Gam Nesativ LaLevi, and therefore it was Mevatel Vidri Meiser. The Gozer Ala Dmai, and also he's the one who made the Gzera on Dmai, that you buy produce from Am Haaretz, you have to take Meiser from it.
Were the Levium were the ones that cut off their fingers also?
That's the same one. Some of them did cut off their thumbs back by Golos Bavel, but now when they came to build the second Beis Hamikdash, they needed Levium who were going to be able to play the instruments. Those Levium who had survived Golos Bavel are not going to be able to. Among the younger Levium, very few came. You find them in the Psukim in Ezra and Nehemiah when it lists the people who came in the first wave of who came in the first wave to build the second Beis Hamikdash. Yeah. It mentions over there you have around a thousand. You have a couple of thousand Kohanim across four families over there. Meanwhile, you only have a couple of hundred Levim. And then later on, 20 odd years later, when Ezra is coming with his group to shore up Jewish life, to strengthen Jewish life in Eretz Yisrael. Also, he says, I was checking among the people and I couldn't find any Bnei Levi among the people. And he actually had to send messengers back to Bavel to tell them to send some Levim. So the Levim were not eager enough to come and build the second Beis Hamikdash and then live in Eretz Yisrael. So the Gozer al-Dmai, so also Yochanan Kohen Gadol is the one who made the Gzeira, who made the Takana about Dmai. What happened? He sent messengers throughout all the borders where Jews were living, throughout Eretz Yisrael. The Rosh, Elohim HaFish, and other Truma Gdola Bovam. He saw that the Amei Aretz are only separating Truma Gdola, but they're not separating Maiser Rishon or Maiser Sheni, and within Maiser Rishon also Trumas Maiser. The idea being, even the Amei Aretz knew that Truma, a person is Chayiv Misa for eating, and they're a Zor is Chayiv Misa for eating, so therefore they were at least careful to separate Truma. It's true that Truma Smeiser has the same dinim, but one point is they figured that, the Levium can deal with Meiser Rishon, and therefore they can deal with Truma Smeiser. We don't have to deal with it. In any case, there's also a point that Meiri elsewhere also makes a point that Truma Gdola is a very little amount. Midaraisi, you can have one grain of wheat to pato the whole pile of wheat. Even Midarabonon, you only need to give 1/60th, so it's not very much. Whereas Truma Smeiser is more, and therefore they didn't like the idea of having to give it. Anyway. The point being, in other words, so there's no such thing as Truma when it comes to Dmai, because when you buy Dmai, by definition, Truma's already been taken. So Elo loy kasha kam betruma smaiser vade kam betruma smaiser dmai. So you're right. We're not talking about regular truma gdola. Rather, we're talking about truma smaiser. You can have the two brises. We can say where again one says that you can muzzle the animal, and the other one says you can't. One's talking about truma smaiser of vadai, where it's vadai that you as a yisro can't eat it and can't feed it to your animals. And even as Tosfos points out, even the koyin really wouldn't be able to if it's something that's normally eaten by people. Versus the second braisa that says that you can't muzzle the animals, talking about trumas maiser or dmai, you have to take it. Midrabanan, but that can't override the issu min haTorah of loy saksa. Okay, so several different possibilities when we say that you're allowed versus not allowed to muzzle the animal when it comes to truma and maiser. Okay, the Gemara says bo mine mirav sheshes. They asked Rav Sheshes the question, "Horisa ich teles umatrezes." What about if the animal
Alexander,
is eating? What? Yeah.
It's still very problematic that a brisa contradicts the Torah, the Gzeres HaKasu.
The brisa is not
how do you explain that?
No, listen. The Torah says Lo Saksim Shor B'Dishon. The brisa is explaining for us that when it comes to Truma, or Trumas Maiser, which is Min HaTorah, then that overrides the issue of Lo Saksim, either because, as Rashi says to begin with, when the Torah says Dishoy, implies something which normally takes place only before the Dayish, only before the threshing is done, and Truma and Maiser are usually taken after that. So therefore, the word Dishoy itself would exclude Truma and Maiser, or according to Tosfos, because the word disha implies something that you would be allowed to eat from, and or that you're allowed to feed your animal, and truma, you're not allowed to. So when you have an isu daraisa on this produce, then the din of lo saksim applies, and you're allowed to muzzle the animal. However, then because of maris ayin, then you should put a little bit in the feed bag. When the isu is only darabanan, the chachamim cannot override a din min haTorah of lo saksim. Therefore, you can't muzzle the animal at all. And if you want to keep the animal from eating it, you're going to have to take other steps, as we're going to talk about on Amud Bey's other possible steps that you could do to prevent the animal from to make it that the animal is not going to want to eat from it, but not that you can actually muzzle it. So it's not the Braisa contradicting the Pasuk. As usual with Braisa, it's explaining the parameters of the din that it says in the Pasuk that the Torah Shabbat Peh is all about. Okay.
It's a stretch. I don't know.
No, it's not a stretch because that's what we're saying. The word disha implies something. The word disha is coming to exclude certain things, and this is what it's coming to exclude. Okay.
That's the Brisa that says that. The Torah doesn't say that.
The Torah doesn't say a lot of things. The Torah doesn't tell us the shape of tefillin either. Right? The Torah doesn't tell us how to shecht either. Right. And that's what we have a Torah Shabbat Pamphlet. All right, let's go.
Well,
it's a bigger stretch.
Yes. Okay. Let's go. Bo mi name it of Sheshes. They asked Reb Sheshes, what about if the animal is going to be eating from the grain and then it's going to be having diarrhea? So in other words, the eating this grain is going to give it digestive problems. So mahu, what would be the din? Are you allowed to muzzle in that case? Even nowadays, by the way, you can look up and find you can find from various animal husbandry groups or whatever that they warn giving too much wheat to your animals is likely to cause them digestive problems. It ferments too quickly in their gut, whatever. Anyway, so what would be the din? Is it mishum de mali lahu? Is it fundamentally the idea behind why the Torah doesn't want you to muzzle the animal is because it's good for the animal to be able to eat from what it's working with? In this case, v'hole mali lahu. In this case, it's not. It's bad for the animal's health. Or maybe the consideration is
pain,
that the animal is going to be in pain, and it's in its little animal brain. It's going to be thinking, oh, there's all this food in front of me. Why can't I eat any from it? Well, the whole chazio mitzdara. In that case, you it's seeing it, and it's having that sigh. It doesn't know to put cause and effect together that if I eat this, it's going to give me digestive problems. So, what would be the din? Omelahur of Sheshes Tinisua. So Rav Sheshes answers them on the basis of the Braisa that we said at the top of the Amud, Rav Shim Ben Yechoyim and Mevi Karshinim, the Torah law, where Rav Shim Ben Yechoyim said that when you have a case where the animal is threshing something which would be osur for you to feed it, for example, we said Truma and Meiser, then you take some kaushinim, you take some of these beans of a certain type of beans, which are usually used as animal food, the toilet law, and you hang it in the animal's feed bag, shakashinim yofus lominakol, because those are better for the animal, they're healthier for the animal than anything else.
And animals like healthy food.
Well, shmaminim, shum demali lahu. So you see, the fundamental idea is that you want something that's healthy for the animal. So therefore, in this case, where it's unhealthy for it, then you would be allowed to muzzle it. In fact, Tosfos says it was only Rav Shimon Yochai saying this. Nevertheless, the Chachamim are not disagreeing with this point of we discussed before, is Rav Shimon Yochai arguing with the Chachamim when he mentions Kashinim, or is he augmenting what they're saying? And instead of Oisamin, instead you could give them Kashinim. But even if we say he's arguing, nevertheless, the Chachamim do agree with the fact is that Kashinim are better for it. So therefore, we see that the basic idea is you want what's good for the animal, what's healthy for the animal, and if not, if it's unhealthy for it, then you are allowed to muzzle it. So in that case, you would be allowed to. You could, by all means, give it kashinim to avoid its tsar, but you would be allowed to muzzle it to prevent it from eating this grain and ending up with digestive problems.
You fill it up on kashinim.
You fill it up on kashinim beforehand, and that would be it. Okay. Iboimhu. Now we have another question. Which again we're going to bring the braisa from before as a proof one way or the other. Is a person allowed to tell a goy, you muzzle my ox and you thresh your grain with it? So that's a point of Rashi. So in other words, a point of Rashi, the vote would be, Marshar explains that in other words, you certainly wouldn't be allowed to tell the goy to thresh my grain with the animal muzzled, because the fact is it's my ox and my grain, and you're only having the goy do the work, and there's no question that would be also. The question would be, though, if the goy wants to thresh his own grain, so the grain belongs to the goy, and the work is being done by the goy, and only you are, and it's your cow. So that's the question. According to Tosfos, actually learns the other way around. Tosfos learns the other way around that we're talking about the other way around. If the goy is threshing his own grain, there's no question that it's mutter. The question would be, what about if he's threshing the Jew's grain? So the question is, are you allowed? Now we have the famous concept in Hilchos Shabbos of Amir L'Nochri, that you're not allowed to tell a goy to do malacha for you on Shabbos that you yourself wouldn't be able to. Maybe Hani Milin in Shabbos, maybe that's only specifically when it comes to Shabbos, which is more chomer, the Isu Skila, because after all, Shabbos involves a potential Isu Skila. Avachasima the Isu Lab, but when it comes to Loisachsim Shobedishoy, which is only a Lab, and the maximum penalty is Malchus, Loi, maybe there's no Isu. Maybe there's no issue of Amir al-Nohri. Tosfos points out, by the way, we do find there is an issue of uh, there is an issue of Amir al-Nachri when it comes to Shemitah and when it comes to Chol HaMoed, but there Tosfos says Shabbos and Yom Tov are all considered one thing, meaning the Maharam explained they're all that Yom Tov, Shavuos is called Shabbos, Shabbos Lashem, like we had in last week's parasha. And when it comes to Chol HaMoed and Yom Tov, they're close enough to Shabbos that the Chachamim found reason to make a gzera on it. Anyway, but here the question is, Chasima, which has on the face of it nothing to do with Shabbos, so maybe therefore it should be allowed. Aduma, Loishno, maybe it doesn't matter, maybe Amir al-Nachri applies across the board to all kinds of Isurim. So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring from the Braisa before. So we said, Nachri Adosh Porosish Yisrael, when a goy is threshing using a Jew's cow, ain't over Mishum Baltaxim, then the Yisrael is not over on Baltaxim, implying Mevahu Deloy over, he may not be over on the Isur Lavin, Chayav Malkus, Ho Isura Ika. It sounds though like the implication is that there is an Isur to do that. What would be the Isur? The Isur Medir Abon of Amir al-Nachri. The whole concept of Amir al-Nachri is Medir Abon. So the Gemara says, no, Bedin hu di Surah Nami Leka. No, actually, the Braisa may mean that there's no Isur Drabbanan at all, but I did the Tonus Sefer, the Yisrael Adosh Poros HaShanachri, over, because in the Sefer, it has to mention that if the Yisrael is using the Goy's cow and threshes with it and muzzles it, then he is over, and there it's clear he's over because the Yisrael is doing the work and he's threshing his own grain. So there it has to say over, turn a reisha, ain't over. Therefore, you could say the reisha uses the expression, ain't over, even though in fact maybe he is completely mutter to do it. So you can't prove from that braisa one way or the other about this matter of Amir al-Nach. So the Gemara says, Toshma, the shokhulei la'avur d'shmur. So let's try to bring another proof. They sent a message from Eretz Yisrael to Shmuel's father. Avur de Shmuel was in his time was a distinguished Talmud Chacham in Babel. He's known as Avur de Shmuel for one thing, because his son Shmuel ended up being far much greater and much more famous than him. But nevertheless, he was a distinguished Talmud Chacham and Rav in his times.
Do we know his name?
He's mentioned in the Gemara elsewhere as Abba bar Abba. So his name was Abba bar Abba, but he's better known in Shas as Avur de Shmuel. There's a long story in it, which I think we've told in this shiur before, that the Goyim tell a story that he was one time away on a trip, and a Goyish lady propositioned him to be mezana with her because she was able to see with her stargazing that night he's destined to father a child who's going to be a very great person, and she wanted to be the mother of that child. He uses the name of Hashem to transport himself immediately back to Nahudah to have relations with his wife that night, so that way the child will be from her. Then he leaves back to go on his business trip. They didn't know that he had been in town. Later on, when she's pregnant, then people thought that there was something wrong over here because they knew he'd been out of town for a while. Akitzer, anyway, eventually, once he came back, everything was straightened out. And from then on, they called him Avur de Shmuel in token of that we know for sure he is this child's father, and all of these rumors that were being spread around are not true. Anyway, so they sent this message to Avur de Shmuel. Kolein Tovi, as far as these oxen, the Ganvin Armoi, Goyim steal them from Jews, or Menagchin Yosain, and they castrate them, and then they return them to the owner. Now Rashi explains, in other words, what happens like this. The Goy knows that the Yid is not allowed to castrate an animal. We have in Parashas Emor, over Arzachem, Loisasu, we learn that there's an Isser on castrating animals or people. Now, the Goyim know, though, that an animal that's been castrated is better for work. It's stronger. So now the Goyim are kind of doing a favor for the Jews. They're pretending to steal the animals. They're castrating them, and then they're returning them to the owners. So now the question is that allowed? Are we allowed to? So if the Goy actually did it without the Yid knowing at all, Tosfos, by the way, brings from Shilta Stirabachoy how the Goyim would do that. Tosfos brings from Shilta Stirabachoy Goyim, what they would do is they would tie a dinner very tightly to that part of the animal. Then the Goy would come and say, hey, there's a coin over there, I want to steal it. And then he's yanking off also that part of the animal. Although Tosfos says the expression in the Gemara over here, Ganvin, doesn't really suggest that. But in any case, the point is they did this kind of trickery in order to castrate the animals. So if it was, uh, so so uh, So if it was that the goy did that the yid didn't know at all that this was going on, then fine, there's no problem. But here the yid knows that it's going on, and therefore so what's the din? Shalach lehu sabur deshmol answered them. Haromis avid behu. They've used a trick like that. They're kind of allowing the Jew. They're kind of allowing the goy to do that. Therefore, arimu alaihu. Therefore, you should make a haroma against them, and you bought the dinim in Eretz Yisrael should penalize them. Vizdabnun, that now they're going to have to sell those animals instead of the this way the Yisrael won't have hana from the avera. He wanted to do it so that it'll be better for plowing with. Now he's going to be penalized that he himself is not going to be able to plow with it. So
better for plowing with because they just are more focused.
And then maybe because they're more focused, maybe whatever it is. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, don't we see from there that Amir al-Akum applies also to areas outside of Hilchos Shabbos and related things? However, Amar Papa, but Papa says that's not really approved. Bnei Ma'arobi Sabri Lakir Abchidka, because the people of Eretz Yisrael may have held to begin with. Like Reb Chidka, he holds in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that which we'll learn next year, Bez Hashem, which discusses in detail all the Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach. But Reb Chidka holds on top of the famous Sheva Mitzvot Bnei Noach, he holds Goyim are also to castrate animals as well. So there's not just that issue of Amir al-Akum. There's an issue of that you're causing that when you tell the goy or connive at the goy doing this, then you're being over on lifnei iver. So on the other hand, for example, when it comes to loy sachsim, which definitely does not apply to goyim, then maybe there's no issue. So the Gemara says, Sovar Rova Lameimar. So in this connection, let's finish off this point about this case with the animals that were being that were being castrated. So Sovar Rova Lameimar, Rova thought to say, when we say that we have to sell them, that Avor Deshmol is saying, you have to sell them, Yimochru L'Shchita. It would mean they have to be sold, and then the buyer, in order that the buyer was going to shech them, because otherwise it comes out that another Yisrael is benefiting from what was done. Or for that matter, the yid himself, who it was done for, is benefiting because a castrated animal is worth more. Because again, it does better work. So therefore, so Rava was thinking that the penalty is that you make him sell it just for meat. But Abaya says, "Dayin shekanasta aleihem mechira." No, it's enough that you penalize them and make them have to sell it. You don't, on top of that, have to have that they have to sell it for the other guy to share. So he's allowed to sell it to somebody else who will use it for plowing, who will use it for farm work. To that extent, we don't penalize him. Well, the Gemara says, "Pshita bnei gadol ki acher dami." Now, there's no question in that connection if you're going to sell the animal to your older son. So the older son is considered like somebody else. So therefore, you can get around the issur by selling it to him. Bnei cotton mai. What about if your child is a cotton? Would the same thing apply? So Rab Achi also, but Rab Ashi Shorin. So there you have a machlokas, Rab Achi and Rab Ashi, where this sort of thing is allowed. And the Gemara finishes off, Maremo Mazutro, Rab Amri Lohanu Tre Chasidi, Maremo Mazutro, or some say two Chasidim, whose names aren't given, Machlofi Ahadori, they would trade such animals with one another. Meaning, in other words, now Tosfa says, in their case, it was actually Shalomi Daitan, unlike the Bnei Ma'arova, we were saying where they connived at it, they knew what the goy is doing, and they just like pretended they didn't know. Here, Marema or Mazutra, or the two chassidim, truly did not know. Nevertheless, people are not going to know, people are not going to believe that it was Shalemi Daitam, or people are going to think that you allowed to tell a goy to do that. So they would be machma on themselves. What they did is they would trade such animals to one another. So Marema would have an animal where a goy had done this to. Mazutra would have an animal, same thing. They would trade the animals with each other. That way, they're still being makayim, what Avor Deshmol said, that you have to give it to somebody else or sell it to somebody else, but nevertheless, they haven't lost out from it. So in the end, the Gemara has not really answered the question about whether you're allowed to tell the goy to do whether you're allowed to give permission to the goy to be choisim the animal or not. And in fact, there is machlokas rishonim on this question. Ultimately, has the Gemara concluded that it is allowed, or has the Gemara concluded that it is allowed, or is it not? Many of the rishonim say that since the Gemara has left the question open, then we have to be machmir because of the suffix. On the other hand, the fact is it's only a suffix dirabonim. So maybe therefore that would be reason to be makel. So So the bottom line is, as far as the castration, so in Shulchan Aruch, when it talks about that, you're not allowed to tell the goy to do it, but if he did it on his own, then it's mutter. And if you have haroma over here, then we make him sell it to another yid. And there also you have the rivid is mako on that, because he says that it's only since the Gemara had mentioned that there was the opinion of Rabbi Chidko, who says that it's also for goyim and therefore would be an issur of lifnei ever. The fact is the halacha is not like Rabbi Chidko. Goyim are allowed to castrate animals, so therefore it might be mutter. But on the other hand, many of the poskim say that not. You have to be machmer on that.
How did a Jew castrate a cat? Is there a way to do that?
So again, as far as pets, you can't really. A yid would not be allowed to. You can buy them already right, spayed or neutered. That's different. But other than that, once it belongs to you, then you can't do that. As far as the chasima, the accepted halacha is that you can't tell the goy to do that, because we are about to ever brings at the end of Shulchan Aruch based on Uliyahu Poskim. Ultimately, what we say is that we say that the concept of hamidul nochri applies not only to Hilchos Shabbos, it applies to cases like this as well.
Okay, and that's what the Alter Rebbe says.
That's how the Alter Rebbe puts
it. Is it in his Hilchos Amir La?
No. So, well, he mentions it in Hilchos Shabbos briefly, but it's mainly at the end of Choshen Mishpat. You have Hilchos Sheila Vachilus Vachasima, and the last siman of it talks about the last few halachas of it talk about these dinim of chasima, and then he finishes off with that. That's like the next to last halacha over there. Okay, continues the Gemara. Boy Romi Bachoma. Rami Bachama asks the question, what about if you put a thorn into the animal's mouth to prevent it from eating? Mahu, what would be the din? Mara asks, what do you mean, Hoshiva? If you actually put the thorn in there deliberately, Chasima Mal, you see, that's a full-fledged Chasima. Obviously, that's obviously no different than putting a muzzle on the animal. Ella, rather, Rami Bachama's question is, Yoshav Lakoitz Bafia Mahu. What happens if a thorn got stuck in its mouth? Are you obligated to take that out before you have the animal start threshing? So the question is now Tosfos says it's one thing when you muzzled it deliberately in order that it shouldn't eat. Then further down on the Omer is going to say you can't thresh with it while it's still muzzled. But here, since the thorn got stuck in there by itself, maybe it's not considered. Maybe it's the equivalent of the animal being sick. You're not obligated. If the animal's sick, you're still allowed to have it work, even though it doesn't just have an appetite. So maybe the same thing would be mutter over here. And then we have other questions. What happens if you, Rami Bachama asks, if you make a lion sit right outside the area so that the animal will be scared and so that the cow will be scared and it won't want to. So again, the Gemara asks,
That's a crazy plan.
The Gemara asks, what do you mean? If you deliberately have the lion crouch over there, again, chasima maliasi, isn't that full-fledged chasima? Because you're directly causing the animal to not eat. Ella, rather, again, the question is, what happens if an animal itself, the lion itself, is crouching out there? Are you responsible to make sure that it gets out of there before you start the threshing? Or maybe it's not your concern since you didn't bring it over there. Tosfos explains that this is kind of an imtim tzoloima. The Gemara has not specified imtim tzoloima, but that's what it is. When it comes to the thorn, you could say it's in its goof, but the ari is far away, so maybe it's not considered chasima. Imtim tzoloima means if you're going to say in the case of the thorn that either way he can't, whether he put the thorn in or not, because the fact is it's something in the goof of the animal, but maybe a lion is different because not in its goof.
Oh, right.
And then similarly, continues the Gemara, hamid b'nom b'chutz mahu. What about if he made the animal's baby stand outside? So in other words, like the animal now misses its child, it wants to go to it, and because of that, it doesn't have an appetite to eat now because it's concerned for its child. So what would be the din? So what would be the din with that? And again, hem it would mean maybe not necessarily, because then you'd have also be considered chasima. Maybe the girsa is supposed to be omad. Tosfos brings both girsas. Really, actually, the Gemara is not asking, because it's one thing when the animal is afraid, because for example, the lion is not going to eat at all, as opposed to omad b'nami machutz, it's not going to not eat at all. It's just going to be less light. So therefore, so even hem it b'nami machutz, maybe we could say is still allowed, or maybe not. also hoset smei lamayim. What about if the animal is thirsty and therefore it's not eating because of its thirst? But again, you're not physically preventing it from eating. It's just hardly, it's less likely to eat because it's thirsty. So what would be the din of all those things? Do you have to, in that case, would you have to give the animal to drink first before you have it thresh? Another question, what would happen if you take a leather cover and spread it over the grain that it's threshing? So the animal won't see what it's threshing, and but the fact is it is threshing it under the cover. So would the din of Lysachsam Shobadisha apply in that case? So it doesn't see anything now. So it doesn't see anything now. On Omer Aleph, we talk about the question is the fundamental thing, the tsar of the animal, or what's healthy for the animal. We established that what's important is what's healthy for the animal. So Marsha points out, nevertheless, you could still say the question is more whether it's considered disha. Is that actually considered threshing when it's under a cover? So you have that question as well. So a bunch of questions. The Gemara says pshut mehochoda. Out of all these questions, at least we can answer one of them based on a braisa. The Tanya, Rashoi bal pora lahari porosi, the owner of the cow, which he's, for example, renting out or lending, he's renting out his animal to somebody else to thresh with it. The owner of the animal, now he would like, obviously, that the animal should eat as much as possible from what the other guy is going to be doing the work with, because that way he doesn't have to feed the animal. So he would be allowed lahari porosi to keep the animal hungry before he rents it out. So this way later on, where so Reuven owns the animal, he's going to rent it out to Shimon. So he would like that it'll eat, that if it's going to fill up, let it fill up on Shimon's food rather than Reuven having to supply food, so he can make the animal hungry before he rents it out to Shimon. So that way it'll eat a lot of Shimon's. But I'll show you Balabayas and vice versa. Shimon can do the other way. When Mahatu Kia Omer Lifnei Abahema, he can untie a bundle of straw in front of the animal, Me'ikra, before it starts threshing. Kadesh Lois Techlahabi Minadisha. So that it won't eat very much this way. It'll fill itself up on the straw and it won't eat much of the grain. So either one of them are allowed to do those kind of things. Now, so the Gemara is assuming lahatu kia omer. The Gemara is assuming it means that what you're doing is you're taking the straw and spreading it over the grain, which is the equivalent of a katalia. So therefore, that would answer that question. But the Gemara says no. Shiny hosam to ka'ochla. First of all, the difference is because there the animal can eat the straw; it can't eat the leather cover. Iborisema. Or another possibility. Anyway, Rashoi Balabais, Lahata Kia Omer, Lifna Behema Mi'ikra. That's I skipped a couple of lines here by mistake. The Braisa just said, Rashoi Balabais, Lahata Kia Omer, Lifna Behema, he can untie a bundle of straw, Kadishalai Tilcham, and Adisha Harbe, so it doesn't eat very much of what it's threshing. The Gemara had assumed that you're untying it to cover the grain, but the Gemara says, no, Shiny Hocha, Shiny Hossam, the Ka'ochel. The fact is, at least it is eating. Iborisema, Rashoi Balabais, Lahata Kia Omer, Lifna Behema Mi'ikra. It doesn't mean to use it to cover the grain. It means that he's going to use that straw to begin with. He's going to give the animal a bundle of straw to eat. That way, by the time it comes to the threshing, it's going to be full already and it's not going to want to eat anything.
So that was saying you're allowed to do.
So therefore, so the Braisa would be saying that. Doesn't necessarily mean that we can prove from that if you cover the grain, that now you should be allowed to muzzle the animal. Not necessarily. So the fact is, all of these questions are left as a suffix. The Rambam paskins and Shulchan Aruch paskins on all of them, you're not allowed to do them. However, you're not allowed to do them as suffix, but if a person does them, he's not chayav malchus, because you can't give a person malchus on suffix. Okay, another question. What would happen if you muzzled the animal outside before? So like this, we're talking about, you can't muzzle the animal while it's threshing. So when it's there in the threshing area, you can't put a muzzle on it. Are you allowed to muzzle it earlier and then you're going to bring it in and start threshing? Mahu shor b'disha amar Rachmana. The pasuk is saying that you're not allowed to muzzle it when it's threshing. V'hola b'disha hu. Here it's not threshing yet. Or jomalei sodosh b'chasima amar Rachmana. Or maybe the Torah is saying you're not allowed to thresh with the animal muzzled, and that would mean you can't muzzle it beforehand either. So the Gemara says, so Amalei, so Rabbi Simoi answers him, mi base of vicha atalomid. You can learn the answer to that from a din that applies to your father's household. Rabbi Yonason was a Kohen. So he's saying you can answer your question based on a din that applies to Kohen. Interestingly, Hagoros v'Tziyonim mentions over here on the side, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that seems to imply Rabbi Yonasan was not a Kohen, because the Gemara discusses over there whether there was ever a Ben Sora Ramoda. And Rabbi Yonasan says, I saw the grave of a Ben Sora Ramoda, and I sat on it. Well, if he sat on it, he can't have been a Kohen. So that would seem to imply he wasn't a Kohen, but here the Gemara seems to be implying he was. Maybe you could say that Yashavti Olav doesn't mean right on it, mean near it, whatever. Anyway, so you can learn from a din that applies to Kohen. The pasuk says, "Yain b'sheicher al teisht ato v'necha itach." You, Aaron, and your sons are not allowed to drink wine or sheicher or other kinds of alcoholic drinks or whatever. You're not allowed to drink b'voyachem when you're coming into the mishkan or the Beis Hamikdash to do the avodah. Does that mean b'voyachem or d'osir? You're only not allowed to after you come in. Ha mishto me'al shori. Does that mean you'd be allowed to drink and then come in and do the avodah? Obviously not. The pasuk makes it clear that you have to be able to distinguish between kodesh and chol, meaning between avodah that was done under the influence, which is posel, which is mecholol, versus which is not, which is kosher. So the fact is, if a person is drunk from beforehand, he's still not going to be able to make that distinction. Therefore, his avodah is going to be just as mecholol, even though he drank beforehand. So no, what it means is, just like over there, it means when you're coming into the Mishkan to do the Avodah, you cannot be drunk at that time. So it doesn't matter whether you drank beforehand or whether you first drink or whether you're first drinking now. Afkan, the same thing over here. B'shas hachanam, the same thing over here. B'shas disha loitei chasima, when you're threshing, there can't be muzzling. So that answers the question. You can't muzzle the animal and then start having it threshing any more than you could drink wine and then go in and do the avodah. So that's that. And we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem, with more dinim about chasima and a whole topic in particular about doing things verbally. To what extent is that considered a maisa?
Yeah.